Daniel chapter 8. In the last chapter, I said that Antiochus Epiphanes came to power after Jesus rose from the grave and ascended to heaven. That was wrong. Actually, Antiochus Epiphanes came to power before Jesus was born. So I edited the last episode to correct that. Now, in this episode, we are going to learn a little bit more about Antiochus Epiphanes and how he desolated the temple in Jerusalem during his time. Verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Belshazzar the king, a vision hath appeared unto me, I, Daniel, after that which had appeared unto me at the beginning. In the last chapter, Daniel told us about a vision that he had during the first year of the reign of Belshazzar, and now he had a follow-up vision in the form of a dream during the third year of Belshazzar's reign. So this next vision was seen by Daniel 2 years later. 2. And I see in a vision, and it cometh to pass, in my seeing, that I am in Shushan, the palace that is in Elam, the province, and I see in a vision, and I have been by the stream Ulai. Shushan is the same palace where Queen Esther lived, and we read about her in the book of Esther. It is the palace in Persia. She was one of the Persian queens. But in Daniel's vision, he is also there, and he's looking out beside a little river called Ulai. 3. And I lift up mine eyes and look, and lo, a certain ram is standing before the stream, and it hath two horns, and the two horns are high, and the one horn is higher than the other, and the high one is coming up last. Now he's seen an animal, which is a ram, with two horns. One horn comes up after the first one, and the horn that comes up after is bigger than the other horn. This is similar to the bear that we saw in the last chapter in Daniel's other vision, where the bear was leaning on one side because one side of the bear was stronger than the other side. And now we have a ram who has one horn that is bigger and stronger than the other horn. Just like the bear, this ram represents the empire of the Persians and the Medes, but the Medes had less strength and less authority in that empire. So the big horn of the ram is the Persians within the Medo-Persian Empire, which a lot of people just call the Persian Empire because the Medes didn't have full authority like the Persians did. In fact, King Cyrus was Persian. This ram represents the same empire that the bear represented in the last chapter. 4. I have seen the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, and no living creatures do stand before it, and there is none delivering out of its hand, and it hath done according to its pleasure, and hath exerted itself. The Persian Empire took over the civilized world after it conquered Babylon. So this is the second great empire of the world. It conquers to the north, the south, and the west. This empire cradles the Mediterranean Sea, and none of the other animals could defend themselves against this ram. The other animals would represent the other nations. This ram is stronger because it's an empire. 5. And I have been considering, and lo, a young he-goat hath come from the west, over the face of the whole earth, whom none is touching in the earth. As to the young he-goat, a conspicuous horn is between its eyes. Now comes a young he-goat coming from the west, and that would be the kingdom of Greece, because Greece is going west across the Mediterranean from the Persian kingdom and Israel itself. So from Greece is coming this goat that has one horn. Now it says the whole earth, and the Greek Empire did take over the whole earth in the sense that it took over all of the civilized nation. And as far as Daniel is concerned, the attack was coming further west than Daniel could see. So to him, it's like the whole earth. It's kind of hyperbole. Hyperbole is when you exaggerate to make a point. Like if I say that I'm starving to death, you know I'm not starving to death. I'm just making a point that I'm really hungry. And Daniel was using hyperbole here, making a point that it's basically the whole civilized world, so it might as well be the whole world that this goat is going to conquer. This goat is going to represent the Greek Empire, just as the leopard with four heads and four wings in the last chapter represented the Greek Empire. 6. And it cometh unto the ram possessing the two horns that hath been standing before the stream, and runneth unto it in the fury of its power. This goat with one horn is running to attack and pierce the ram. And that's what the Greek Empire did. It quickly attacked the Persians and conquered them. 7. And I have seen it coming near the ram, and it becometh embittered at it, and smiteth the ram, and breaketh its two horns, and there hath been no power in the ram to stand before it, and it casteth it to the earth, and trampleth it down, and there hath been no deliverer to the ram out of its power. Nobody could deliver the Persian Empire from the fury of the Greeks. The Greeks conquered them and trampled them, just like this goat trampled the ram, and broke both of the ram's horns of strength. One horn was the Persians, and the other horn was the Medes, but both were conquered under the Greeks. 8. And the young he-goat hath exerted himself very much, and when it is strong, broken hath been the great horn, and cometh up doth a vision of four in its place, at the four winds of the heavens. So again, this is a little bit of hyperbole here. Daniel is talking about the four corners of the earth. It's the known civilized world at the time, which doesn't include China and South America and Australia and the North Pole. It's not the entire world. Daniel saw this great horn broken, and that great horn would be Alexander the Great, who initiated the conquest of the Greeks over the Persians. He died at one point, and that's why that horn broke. And then four horns rose up in its place, because when Alexander the Great died, he divided his kingdom between his top four generals. Their names were Ptolemy, Antigonus, Cassander, and Lysimachus. Those four generals divided up the land of Greece. There was the Ptolemy kingdom, which had been part of Greece, and that covered Egypt in the south. And then there was the Seleucid kingdom, kind of in the eastern part that used to be Greece. And the generals Cassander and Lysimachus took territory that was on the western part of where Persia used to be. So it's kind of northwest of the Mediterranean Sea, touching the Mediterranean Sea. 9. And from the one of them come forth hath a little horn, and it exerteth itself greatly toward the south, and toward the east, and toward the beauteous land. This little horn that comes out of one of the other horns is Antiochus Epiphanes. He was a very narcissistic, evil man. He hated the Jews, and he was trying to take over more territory for himself. It's almost like he was probably trying to claim all of the territory that these four generals had all for himself. So he started fighting around the territories that these other generals had. He fought toward the beauteous land, which is Israel, because he hated the Jews. They wouldn't worship him, and he wanted to be worshipped as a god. Antiochus is a type or a foreshadowing of the Antichrist to come, who is in the end times. It talked about four horns on the beast. Three horns were dissolved, and then one took their place and shouted blasphemies. That was a foreshadowing of the Antichrist to come. It's also a look at how Antiochus Epiphanes acted, because he acted like the Antichrist. He had a Hitler personality. He just wanted to kill and conquer as much of the world as he could, and he hated everybody. 10. Yea, it exerteth unto the host of the heavens, and causeth to fall to the earth of the host, and of the stars, and trampleth them down. This little horn that's on the goat is trying to say that he's better than God, And it says that he causes stars to fall down. The stars would represent those who serve the Lord. He hated the Israelites, so any Israelite who was following God, Antiochus wanted to kill, and they are like stars. In the New Testament, it says that some of us, when we go to heaven, will shine as bright as the stars. So this is speaking of people who were on their way to heaven. 11, and unto the prince of the host it exerteth itself, and by it taken away hath been the continual sacrifice, and thrown down the base of his sanctuary. Antiochus Epiphanes made the Jews stop sacrificing to the Lord on a daily basis, and he desecrated their altar so that they could no longer use it. This is because of his great hatred for the Jews. Daniel saw all of this in a vision hundreds of years before it happened, and that's why a lot of secular scholars claim that the book of Daniel is a fraud and it was actually written later after these events happened. But there are many clues in the book of Daniel that show us that it was written in the time of Daniel. So you have a choice. Are you going to believe God's word or not believe God's word? If you don't want to believe God's word, then you'll go with the secular scholars who have all of these arguments that they cannot prove against the book of Daniel. 12. And the host is given up with the continual sacrifice through transgression, and it throweth down truth to the earth, and it hath worked and prospered. Antiochus took over the temple, and he prospered in doing that. He was able to desecrate the entire temple, literally throwing truth to the ground. What he did was he sacrificed pigs on the altar of God, and he told the Jews that if they did not eat pig meat, which was a sin at that time, today we can, but the Jews weren't allowed to before Christ came. So he told them that if they wouldn't eat pigs, that he would torture them to death, and some of them were tortured brutally and savagely to death because they would not disobey the Lord. To recap the history of the temples in Jerusalem, the first temple was built by King Solomon after King David died, but that temple was destroyed by the Babylonians when the Babylonian Empire came into play. And that is why all of Daniel's dreams begin with the Babylonian Empire, because that was the first empire that threatened Israel. And all of Daniel's dreams continue on until Christ is born, which is at the height of the Roman Empire's time, and then continue even further to the end times when Christ returns, which is during the time of the Antichrist. So all of Daniel's dreams and visions, including the dream that he interpreted for King Nebuchadnezzar, all of them point to Christ. The history that's given to us in the Bible all centers around Christ. It's not random history given for no good reason. So the Babylonians destroyed the first temple. Then King Cyrus, who was king of the Persians, authorized the Jews to build a second temple during the Second Empire, which was the Persian Empire. Then that temple was desecrated during the Third Great Empire, which was the Empire of the Greeks under Antiochus Epiphanes. He desecrated it. But then, later on, they were able to reestablish it. So Antiochus didn't destroy the temple. It didn't have to be rebuilt. It just had to be purified after all of this desecration had taken place. And that's the story of the Maccabees and Hanukkah that you and I know of. That was when the Jews reclaimed the temple and purified it again, and then started doing sacrifices in it again. So when Jesus was born on earth, the temple was back in operation. Now this was the second temple that was back in operation after it had been purified, after it was desecrated by Antiochus Epiphanes. Then in AD 70, the Roman Empire, which was the fourth empire, destroyed the second temple. And that's why we do not have a temple in Jerusalem today. The Emperor Titus of Rome destroyed the second temple. Now, remember, Antiochus desecrated the second temple, but he did not destroy it, so the Maccabees were able to later purify it again and continue using it. But when Titus came along during the fourth great empire, which was the empire of Rome, that's when the second temple was destroyed, and that's why we no longer have a temple. Now, the only time we're guaranteed a third and final temple is during the millennial reign of Christ. Some people think that the Jews will build this temple. I'm not certain about that, because if the Jews built it today, before Christ returns, then they would desecrate it by doing animal sacrifices. And there is no need for an animal sacrifice anymore since Jesus died on the cross. I think it's more likely that Christ himself will build the third temple, because he'll do it right. There won't be any obsolete sacrifices taking place, and it will be built perfectly for him to dwell there for 1,000 years. And he isn't going to have to hire a construction crew. If Christ builds it, he will speak, and then it will exist instantly. 13. And I hear a certain Holy One speaking, and a certain Holy One saith to the wonderful numberer who is speaking, till when is the vision of the continual sacrifice and of the transgression and astonishment to make both sanctuary and host a treading down? An angel is crying out in Daniel's vision, saying, how long is this desolation going to last? And we're talking about the desolation that Antiochus Epiphanes put in the sanctuary, which is he was sacrificing pigs on God's altar, and he also set up a statue of Zeus to represent himself as God, and he proclaimed himself to be God. 14. And he saith unto me, till evening, morning, 2,300, then is the holy place declared right. In the Bible, a day always begins at sundown in the evening. A day never ever begins in the morning. In fact, in the morning, the day is actually half over. It's pagans who say that a day begins in the morning because they worship the sun, and so they believe a day begins when the sun comes up. And that's why we have Sunday, and we go to church in the morning when the sun comes up, because Sunday church service was started by the Catholic Church, which had in some ways instigated a lot of these pagan rituals. So that's why they wanted everybody to go to church the day of the sun in the morning when the sun is shining. And it's a misconception that Jesus rose on the morning from his grave. He actually rose the night before in the evening, because that was the beginning of that third day. He rose at the beginning of the day, which was sundown, the evening before the women came to the tomb and found it empty. When they found the tomb empty, it had already been empty for a good 5 hours, probably, or more. Here again, we see the Bible telling us that a day begins in the evening, and it will be about 2,300 days before this desolation ends. Now, that would be a little over 6 years, which means that the time from when he first desecrated the temple and the altar to the time when the Maccabees restored it purified so that the temple could be used again for purposes of the Lord was a little over 6 years. 15. And it cometh to pass in my seeing, I, Daniel, the vision, that I require understanding, and lo, standing over against me is as the appearance of a mighty one. Now, when Daniel was seeing all this, he didn't understand it, and that's another hint that Daniel did see this about 300 years before it occurred. If somebody wrote it after these events occurred, it would have been obvious to him what all of this dream meant. But it wasn't obvious to Daniel because these events had not occurred yet. The only thing that had occurred was that the Babylonian kingdom was established, and that's very little of what Daniel was getting visions of. 16. And I hear a voice of man between the banks of Ulai, and he calleth and saith, Gabriel, cause this one to understand the appearance. So there is the angel Gabriel, which we're also going to see in the New Testament because Gabriel appeared to Mary and told her that she was going to give birth to Jesus. But here Gabriel is standing before Daniel, and another angel is calling to Gabriel saying, "Gabriel, tell Daniel what this vision means." And there's no way that Daniel could have had any understanding unless he was told, because again, these things had never happened. 17. "And he cometh in near my station, and at his coming in I have been afraid, and I fall on my face, and he saith unto me, Understand, son of man, for at the time of the end is the vision." As we have said before, prophecy in the Bible can be historical and futuristic at the same time. So from Daniel's perspective, most of these things hadn't happened, so all of it was futuristic to him. But the angel Gabriel is also telling him that this is also a prophecy of the end times. So what Antiochus Epiphanes did in the temple was a type or a foreshadowing of what the Antichrist would do in the end times. Antiochus Epiphanes persecuted the Jews for worshiping and obeying the Lord, and he tried to stop them from obeying the Lord by torturing them and killing them. And in the end times, the final great Antichrist will do the same thing. He will torture and murder anyone who obeys the Lord and follows the Lord. 18. "And in his speaking with me, I have been in a trance, on my face, on the earth, and he cometh against me, and causeth me to stand on my station." Daniel was so overwhelmed by the presence of holiness in this vision that he fell on his face and he couldn't move. That's what he means by being in a trance. This isn't a New Age trance. He's simply frozen in holy fear. And the angel has to pick him up and make him stand again because he doesn't have the human strength to stand on his own before the presence of the Lord. 19. "And saith, Lo, I am causing thee to know that which is in the latter end of the indignation, for at the appointed time is the end." The vision is turning toward the end times, and Gabriel says, "I'm going to tell you about the end times." Gabriel is telling Daniel that it's even more important to know what will happen in the end times before Christ sets up his eternal kingdom than it is to know what will happen in the more immediate future of the next 100 years when Antiochus Epiphanes takes over power. 20. "The ram that thou hast seen possessing 2 horns are the kings of Media and Persia." 21. "And the young he-goat, the hairy one, is the king of Javan, and the great horn that is between its eyes is the first king." The king of Javan would have to represent Greece. The word Javan means one who deceives or makes sad. That's a really good interpretation of Satan, because Satan constantly lies to us, and thus he makes us sad. If we believe his lies, we'll believe that God doesn't care about us, that we're not good enough, that we're not pretty enough, that we don't have enough of our needs met, and we'll be depressed all the time, and we'll act like barbarians in order to get our needs met. And that's what forces a lot of people into sin. They believe the lies of Satan that make them feel sad, and then they're very desperate to end their sadness by trying to get physical needs met. This word also describes Antiochus Epiphanes as well, and the Antichrist. 22. "And that being broken, stand up do 4 in its place. 4 kingdoms from the nation do stand up, and not in its power." Maybe Javan represented Alexander the Great because he was the first ruler of the Greek Empire, and then he died, and he passed it on to his 4 generals. 23. "And in the latter end of their kingdom, about the perfection of the transgressors, stand up doth the king, fierce of face, and understanding hidden things." 24. "And his power hath been mighty, and not by his own power, and wonderful things he destroyeth, and he hath prospered, and wrought, and destroyed mighty ones, and the people of the holy ones." This is talking about Antiochus Epiphanes, who tried to destroy the people of Israel. And he prospered in doing that. He was able to rule over them and murder and torture many of them for several years. 25, and by his understanding, he hath also caused deceit to prosper in his hand, and in his heart he exerteth himself, and by ease he destroyeth many, and against the prince of princes he standeth, and without hand he is broken. The prince of princes is God, or the Son of God. Antiochus Epiphanes tried to overpower God himself. He tried to say that he was God, and that the Jews couldn't worship the true God. He very easily persecuted the Jews and conquered many people. But then Antiochus was broken. And this also foreshadows the future Antichrist. He will put himself in place of God. He will persecute anyone who follows Jesus. But then Jesus will break the Antichrist and destroy him. Antiochus died of a miserable disease. That was fitting punishment for all that he had done against the Lord. 26. And the appearance of the evening and of the morning that is told is true. And thou, hide thou the vision, for it is after many days. The vision of the evening and the morning was showing us how many days the temple would be desecrated and desolate by Antiochus, and that was a little over 6 years. And it's called the vision of the evening and morning because that's how the Bible describes a day. If you go back to Genesis, it said, and the evening and the morning were day one, and it continues on. Every single day in the Bible begins in the evening. We were created in darkness, and our lives were in darkness before we met Christ. So the beginning of our lives and the beginning of the world and the beginning of every day begins in darkness. But then the light comes, and that light is Jesus. So the end of the day is full of light, and that's why the millennial reign will take us into eternity. If we give our lives to Christ, then that light comes in. A day always begins in the evening to remind us that we have nothing until we have God. 27. And I, Daniel, have been, yea, I became sick for days, and I rise and do the king's work, and am astonished at the appearance, and there is none understanding. After Daniel had this vision and this experience with the Lord, he was sick. He couldn't even get out of bed for several days. But when he finally was able to get out of bed, he went back to work and kept serving King Belshazzar. So he had to take sick leave because of this vision. You know, today there's a lot of ministers who are very flippant and casual about God, and they act like God is their very best private buddy, and that they can sing and dance around with him, and when the glory cloud comes down, they sing and dance and laugh in the midst of it. But you don't see those kind of behaviors in the Bible. When the glory cloud comes down in the Bible, no one can stand in it, and no one can stand before it. And when even angels who are glorified appear before men in the Bible, the people are terrified and fall on their face, and they're not even seeing God. And when God appeared to Elijah, he could only show Elijah his back with his hand covering Elijah at the same time. So he was protecting Elijah from dying at seeing his face. And the Bible tells us that if we see God's face in our unglorified bodies, we will die. Daniel in this vision was seeing as much as he could see of the Lord without actually seeing the Lord. He spoke to angels and he saw visions that came straight from heaven. And that alone made him sick for several days. And that concludes Daniel chapter 8.